Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Hitchcock, and welcome to Wealth Protector TV. Really excited to have you here and excited to have our guest, John Riera, who is the owner of, John, I want to make sure I get this right, American Air Testing Incorporated.
That is correct.
Great. And listen, you and I were talking offline, a lot of topics going on with landlords and tenants, and you're all about helping landlords to mitigate risk and really cover their, cover their butts when it comes to potential liability with tenants. So what we're jumping in here today is what landlords need to know to manage tenants, best practices. What do we have going on?
Well, let's start out with what they should be doing in the first place is when they get a new tenant in, that there should be some type of walkthrough with photography to make sure that the way that the tenant is receiving the space, home, condo, whatever the case may be, that they have some type of background information so that when they have to go and return the deposit, that they have an apple-to-apples comparison.
Are you talking about when so a landlord gets a new tenant, and with the landlord and the tenant same time, do a video walkthrough when you're filming what, the walls and the floors and everything? Is that what you're talking about?
Pretty much. And then there should also be some type of a checklist showing condition of the floor. You can map to each individual room so that not only do you have the photography, but you have something in writing so that by the time you're ready to hand over the keys, both parties have some type of a map as to, the condition of the property, so that at the end of occupancy, when we start talking about, the deposit, that if they give it back in a good condition, you have everything mapped. If it's not in a good condition, then there's, what comes back out of the deposit.
Well, it's interesting you say that because you would think every landlord would do this. And you reminded me, whenever you rent a car, first thing they do is they do a walk around with you around the car and you sign a paper. I looked at the car. We looked at the dings, the dents. That's for a car. So I'm imagining you got to do this for a piece of property.
You'd be surprised how many people don't, but, nothing is, out of sync there. Right. The other thing is you should make sure that the tenant has renter's insurance.
Okay.
That they're additionally insured, but most tenants, you'd be surprised, do not get tenant insurance. And then that's where the attorneys, get involved.
Right.
Then much past that, there should be something in the lease or rental agreement that dictates to if there is a water damage that is not reported, that if mold becomes a condition from that episode, that the tenants are held responsible and the tenants should be contacting whomever, the management team or the owner, within 24 hours of that damage taking place. Because here's the simple formula with mold: no water, no elevated humidity, no mold growth. And you got really a 3-day period of time to have something dried out completely. It would be good for the landlord to have a mitigation company or remediator on hand that they've worked with in the past, who does this type of remediation, because they could come in if there is a water episode, that they can come in, and if it's dried within 24 to 48 hours, and usually A lot of people come in with fans, which is wrong, because if there is a mold problem, that just spreads the mold.
Fan spreads the mold?
Yes.
I see that all the time.
I know. I understand. That's where you get cross-contamination throughout the building, throughout the unit. What they need to be doing is coming in with dehumidifiers. Some companies that I've worked with, some management teams, have their own dehumidifiers, and they deploy those as soon as they find out that there has been water damage or a leak. And if it's plumbing in nature, definitely have a plumber that can come in and fix the leak. And it would be nice if the tenant even knew where the shutoff valve for the unit is, so that, you know, if it is spraying all over creation, right, they have some way to mitigate their own damages.
John, when does somebody, a landlord, bring you in? Like, what is the ideal relationship where they have a new tenant coming in? Are you coming in as part of the team that signs off on stuff, or if there's an issue, like, how does it work with you?
I'm really usually not called in at the beginning of tenancy. Okay, because everything should be clean, everything should be freshly painted, there shouldn't be any leaks. I'm really not necessary. If there is an odor detected and, you know, they try to air out the unit and the odor is not going away, before you even try to rent a particular location, then that may be a good time to call me in. I'm not even necessary if there's been a water issue, if it has been dried out correctly, as I just mentioned, with right, dehumidification within the first 2 to 3 days, then the probability of any mold growth is slim to none. And so save your money. I'm not needed or necessary.
Is your company doing the damage control with the dehumidifiers and stuff? Are you doing that?
No.
Okay,
no,
that's somebody else.
That would be, that's what the remediation company does. We don't want to have a conflict of interest, because there are some companies out there that do both the testing and the remediation, and that's truly considered a conflict of interest.
Okay, so you're doing the
testing. I have no vested interest other than finding a problem, writing the instructions on how to take care of the problem if there is one, and if there is one and the work is completed, then I would come back at the end of the remediation and do mold verification testing.
Okay.
And so that ensures safe reoccupancy or worker safety if that becomes an issue.
Okay. So the testing you're doing, you're brought in when there's some indication of something's wrong. You're doing the testing. And what are you finding? Like, what's common that you're finding that is a problem?
Well, normally when we come in and we're called in to do a project, the first thing we do is we send out a questionnaire, and I think I've sent that to you in the past, and
yeah,
it pretty much gives everybody a guideline of what they believe is the problem. It is nice if you can get the tenant to fill out the questionnaire, because they're the ones that are there 24/7, right, you know, theoretically. And you'll also understand what their complaint is, because usually the complaint isn't very clear over the phone. If they're willing to fill out the questionnaire, that just gives not only myself, but if this did go into litigation, a far clearer picture of what the tenant's complaint is or was.
Yeah. And we know, you and I've talked, this is a big deal, because at the law firm that, you know, where I work, Barth Calderon, an asset protection firm, we work with a lot of property owners, and, you know, we have mold cases that have progressed into $1 million lawsuits, you know, where tenants complain of respiratory issues and so forth. Landlord didn't handle the whole scenario properly. And it just blew up. I mean, this is a big, big deal. And then the insurance companies can try to get out of these claims. You know, we've had that happen. They're always fighting them. So, this is not a little thing we're talking about here. This is a big deal.
It truly is. And just to step back a step, if there is a problem, with water intrusion and the owner or management company engages their insurance company, that information, whether the claim is denied or accepted by the insurance company, it goes into a national database called CLUE. The acronym stands for Comprehensive Loss Underwriters Exchange. And it's kind of like checking your credit report when you go to sell the building.
Yeah.
Whether they accept or deny the claim, it goes into this database, but I tell my clients, don't check that for at least 4 to 6 months after the loss, after the claim, because they don't necessarily put that information in immediately.
Interesting.
And the website is choicetrust.com. And for $20, before they even buy a building, they can pull a CLUE report on the building that they're purchasing to see if there have been any past claims for water damage and or mold.
Interesting. And
there's been disclosure fraud in some of the projects that I've worked on. And by giving them that information, I've solved some court cases because the previous owner did not disclose.
Ah, okay.
So take into consideration that this is something that sometimes even the tenants, before they go into a place, if they're doing this through a realtor, they can pull that information up, but they would need the owner's permission to glean that information. And it may also be a strategy because so many insurance claims no longer have the mold inclusion as part of it, and they have sometimes a very large, upfront that I'm trying to think of the word where, you know, they're liable for the first $1,000 and then after that they pay.
Deductible.
So if they see that the project is going to be under this amount, they may not want to contact their insurance company initially. But then again, I'm not giving legal advice.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's more of a monetary decision. But the other thing is, if there is a remediation and my services are needed, then my final document, which would be the post-remediation verification testing, which shows that the levels are within the acceptable range, because there's always mold, it's ubiquitous. Then you have all the ammunition you need if there's future litigation because the tenant is saying, oh, I feel sick, or, oh, my clothes or my contents are contaminated. I have a document that kind of supersedes that. But you have to remember, that's a snapshot in time.
Right.
There could be another episode 2 months, 3 months, or 5 months down the line where there's another water episode that could accelerate potential damage, So that's why I'm kind of demarcating a boundary line that says, on such and such a date, we came back, we retested, and the testing is done if there's wall or flooring removal, is done before the new material is put back.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're covering up the potential. And this way, if I'm looking at studs or I'm looking at a subfloor and I'm doing the testing and it passes and they put new material over the floor or the wall or the ceiling, somebody comes behind me 6 months later, they're going to get a similar or better result because the surface is encapsulated.
Ah, okay.
Just another layer of protection.
Right.
But anyway, that's my take on that.
Yeah. Does there need to be like a big flood in a place for mold to exist, or can it be this small little thing? I mean, does it have to be water, or can it be just a damp area for mold to grow?
Just a damp area for mold to grow, because then that's where we start getting elevated readings with a hygrometer, with which is a temperature humidity gauge. So if we see that the humidity inside the unit or the rooms is somewhere between 52 to 55%, then, or lower, that takes away the favorable environment for mold growth. So that's right. Why not only are we using moisture meters to actually test these surfaces, but we're also getting a gauge on what the condition of moisture in the ambient air is.
Interesting. Very interesting.
So, again, just because you don't smell it doesn't mean that it's not a problem. And right. just because you smell it doesn't mean that it's a toxigenic mold, or it could be something else. I mean, we also do chemical testing of over 400 different chemical compounds, and I don't want to sky off too far off the subject.
Yeah, right.
But tracking down odors, we've had some units to where, especially where there's a large Asian population that really likes using mothballs, and it gets into the central HVAC system, and then it permeates other units, or even cigarette smoke. We can also test for cigarette smoke, but trying to track down the location on projects like this is complicated, but we've had very good success solving odor problems that aren't necessarily specific to mold.
Right, right. Interesting. And I want to ask you, as we're hitting our up here against time, is love the fact that you have a family run business. Just remind people that haven't met you before, as I know I've had you on the show before, but about your company and how you're working with your family. I think it's so awesome.
It's been exciting. We have some of the most interesting dinner discussions on Thanksgiving that would probably take most people's appetite away, because we deal with a lot of different things. My wife and I started the business. It will actually be 20 years on 9/11 of this year.
Okay.
Yeah, we started this when 9/11 happened.
Interesting. Wow.
Believe it or not,
incredible.
I had been researching being an industrial hygienist. I was actually working at the time was SBC Pac Bell as a system integration manager, but I have a lot of background in real estate. In the 90s, I was a real estate appraiser. I was buying and selling real estate as a private investor. So I've been around the block on this subject. That being said, I started this business, believe it or not, when I turned 50. So I turned 70 this year.
Man, you don't look a day over 50.
85. So 3 years into it, I'm starting to say, well, my legs aren't moving as fast. And my son was up in Mendocino County, doing jobs up there.
Yeah.
Different industry. And I called him up one day and I said, hey, John, I'm getting older. And, who am I going to give this business to? Are you interested in checking it out? And he said, sure. So he came back down, did it for a couple months with me. And he's going on 16 years now and probably well over 4,000 inspections.
Wow.
My daughter, who's 7 years younger than my son, finished going to UC Berkeley and still had no direction in mind. So I go, well, Michelle, how would you like to take over what your mom's doing? And she gave it a try for a couple of months. And she's also a licensed inspector and has field experience, has probably done close to 1,000 inspections herself.
Wonderful.
So it's interesting. I'm blessed. And this is what you call the perfect medium for social security in-house.
Putting the kids to work. I love it.
Putting the kids to work.
I love it. John.
And they pretty much have taken over, and I'm just basically being used on a consulting basis, but they pretty much handle all the day-to-day. I get to talk in front of beautiful people like you and kind of live the life of luxury here.
Yeah, you're the one with the white hair, right? That gets out there. the smart guy.
That's what it takes.
John, always a pleasure to chat with you. I know we're going to continue this discussion. Thanks, everybody, for being here. And we'll look forward to having you back. Thanks, John.
Looking forward to it, Paul. And you have a wonderful day and happy Memorial Day.
Thank you. Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.